Welcome, everyone, to Ophthalmology Times Beyond the Walls. This is a new podcast where we're introducing people that I admire so much in the field, and we're going to get to know them a little bit better through this podcast. And I cannot be more excited to introduce Dr. Marguerite McDonald, who has been a pioneer in not only refractive surgery, but also in the dry eye space. She's been in a lot of leadership positions over time, as well as has published 1,800 publications. I mean, Marguerite, I just can't even get over that. The fact that you're meeting with us to talk about your story and how you became an ophthalmologist and what it was like to be really at the forefront as a pioneer is just remarkable. So let's kind of start from the beginning. What inspired you to get into medicine?
Well, my dad was a doctor. He was an orthopedic surgeon, and it was very clear that he loved what he did. And he came home and, yes, you know, there are hassles being in private practice. We all know them so well. But the joy he had at dinner time telling us what he'd done that day, it was contagious. So I knew I wanted to be a doctor. There was a very brief period when I was 4 or 5 years old where I wanted to be Annie Oakley. You know, I wanted to be a cowgirl, but for the most part, I really wanted to be a doctor. And ophthalmology, the journey into ophthalmology started because I really was an extremely high myope, and that was undetected when I was a child. I thought everybody saw the world the same way I did, just blurry blotches of color. And I could tell my aunt was coming in because I could smell her perfume. I thought, this is how people function. When you're extremely myopic, squinting doesn't help much. So one day, my mother and her best friend piled their kids into the car and said, let's go to this new thing. It's called a strip mall. And all the stores are there together. So we drove to the mall, and the parents said, let the kids run around and play while we go into the shops. So there was a pond covered with green scum. It was the same color as the grass. I did not see the pond. So I go running full tilt, and all of a sudden I'm underwater. My legs are entangled in light lumber, and I'm drowning. And the other little kids with me, the other 5 and 6 year olds, were screaming. And some Eagle Scouts were walking by who had just finished their training for CPR. They dove in, extricated me, did CPR, and brought me back. And my mother comes out of the store screaming, why did you jump into that lake? And I said, Mom, I didn't see the lake. That moment, she threw a blanket around me, and dripping wet, we went to an optometrist's office. He had the office next to my father, and he's clicking away, refracting me. Click, 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 -8, -9, up, up, up. And he said to my mother, your daughter has malignant myopia, and she's going to be blind when she grows up. And I started to cry, and he said, shut up. And I did. I became very quiet. He goes into the back room, makes up a little pair of spectacles, and I was somewhere around -11 at that point. Puts them on my face, or he gave them to my mother. My mother put them on my face, and I'm looking at her, and the voice I've heard for 5 years is coming out of this gorgeous face. Everybody thinks their mother is gorgeous. My mother was truly gorgeous. She was Chicago's top model and a stand-in for Audrey Hepburn.
Oh, wow.
I'm trying to process that this voice, my mother's voice, is coming out of this beautiful face. So I'm holding my glasses like this, and then I looked up to the side, and there was a window, and I saw a tree. And I said, oh, all those little green things I've been finding on the ground and holding up to my nose, they're all up there together, up in the sky in that tree. It was a revolution, a revelation and a revolution. So I tied those glasses on, and my poor mother had to wash my hair and give me a bath around the glasses. I would never take them off. Finally, after they'd been on 6 weeks, she said, "Marguerite, if you put them on your bedside, they will be there tomorrow morning."
Oh, I mean, talk about a story that really, you know, leads you in the path that you were supposed to go. And so now you get into ophthalmology, and you were so instrumental in developing and performing the world's first eczema laser procedure in patients. And so do you think that this kind of start in life with being so myopic and feeling what it was like to see without glasses and then with glasses gave you a different perspective and a different passion?
For sure. And there's one more part, a little extra part of that story. So I wear my thick glasses. And there used to be a state rule in Illinois, where I grew up, that you couldn't wear contacts until you were 16. On my 16th birthday, I was back in the same optometrist's office, and he fit me with polymethyl methacrylate contact lenses, these horrible early suit plates that were just terrible. And I put them on, and they were uncomfortable, but I didn't care. I was so happy. And I ran over to my best friend's home, and I knock on the door, and her older brother opens the door, and he looks down at me, and here I am without my thick glasses on. He says, "Marguerite, is that you?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Hey, you want to go to the movies this weekend?" And I said, "Someday we're all going to see without glasses or contacts."
That's incredible, though. I mean, this really has been a lifelong passion and a journey for you.
Yes.
What has been maybe the one thing that has stuck out in your mind that, you know, truly kind of wakes you up and gets you out of bed every day?
The patients, they are our North Star, to help more of them see. I'm not a retina person, but, you know, it brings me to tears, all the wonderful things that have happened in retina. Dry AMD, wet AMD, it's amazing. You know, yeah. I see people all the time who are driving and enjoying life. And I say to them, you know, 15 years ago, you would be using a white cane and a seeing eye dog. There are so many wonderful things that have happened in the last few years. And in cornea, the same. And refractive surgery has changed. Now, science marches on, and it's so exciting to play a role in it. But if whenever you're wondering, what should I do? What's the next step? The North Star is the patients, and it always becomes very clear.
And that's why I love talking to you, because it really comes down to that. You know, it's your compassion, your care for helping others and serving. And that's what I found, you know, that inspires me when I talk to a lot of leaders or entrepreneurs, how, you know, that kind of all ties together, you know, having purpose, having a heart of service, and really going through the hard, meaning not, you know, being afraid to make mistakes. Do you feel, looking back, there were any, you know, maybe setbacks or failures that inspired you to grow?
Setbacks can either crush you or make you stronger.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a first-year medical student, even though we had more female medical students in our class and in ever any class in any medical school ever, they wrote it up in Time magazine, "Has Columbia University lost its mind?" was the theme. There were still very few of us.
Wow.
And there was a party after the first month of school where they gave out prizes. And I was voted girl most likely to flunk out, get married, and be driving a station wagon around filled with children and not make it to the end of the first year.
No. Did that light a fire under you?
Yeah, I became a first in the class. Yeah.
You go, girl. You feel like it's those times, though, that you're like, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to push beyond the walls of, you know, what, you know, society thinks.
And by the way, in the early days of eczema, it was quite some time before it was accepted. There were terrible things said about our team from the podium in print. One of the most famous ophthalmologists in the world at that time wrote a letter that was published in the AJO saying that Dr. McDonald must be lying about her eczema laser research just to get famous. She must be lying. It, based on nothing, you know, just the monkey data and early human data that we had published. A letter like that, based on no data, shouldn't be published, but he was a very famous, influential man. There was a lot of that. They thought we were frivolous. They thought the research money should be spent on diabetes or glaucoma, not this, and unethical for firing an industrial strength laser at the central visual axis of people who didn't like their glasses. Are you kidding? You know, so they made a lot of fun of us.
And was there any point in that time where it kept you up at night? You know, I see you as such a confident woman who, you know, you're like, okay, I'm not going to let other people bother me. I'm not going to let people say things and make it stop what I'm doing. Like, what advice would you have for us, you know, when we get confronted like that, because it does happen, whether it's patients or whether it's, you know, individuals who don't believe what you're doing when you're progressive, correct? And so what would you say kind of kept you going?
Well, I would say two things. A real core belief that what you're doing is ethical and is going to help patients. Millions of patients someday. That keeps you going. And if you're really lucky, you have the support of a wonderful spouse. That cannot overestimate how important that is. I was and am continued to be very lucky. Dr. Steve Kleiss.
And I see you and Steve traveling together, and he's right alongside of you, and he's contributed a lot to the field as well. And it's really fun to watch you guys, how you encourage one another. And he's your biggest fan. I love it. You know, when you're up on stage giving a talk, he's right there listening. And I love that about you guys. And that's the model that I want to be. Marriage is tough, you know, and especially when you're a woman in medicine, you have a lot of demands. Do you feel like you've learned how to balance family, career in some way? Or do you feel like it's kind of give and take depending on what you're working on?
Number two, it's give and take depending on what you're working on.
Yeah.
It's very, very important to spend time on your marriage, keep the relationship healthy. That's critical.
Yeah.
Absolutely critical to your own happiness, your career success, everything. That is number one on the list.
Yeah. And I think we've kind of backed ourselves sometimes into a wall by talking about this work-life balance. I think it's more where you're supported. You know, you need to be supported at home and you need to be supported at work to have, you know, kind of the best of both worlds. But there'll be time where you're really invested in something, whether it's at home with kids or with your spouse, or there's going to be times that work takes you away. And just when you have that support behind you in both areas, that's where I've felt like it's really helped me be a better leader and just a better, you know, woman overall.
Yeah, and for sure to be, as you say, a better leader, because you can see there are times when the people who work with you are having a really tough time, and to support them as best you can, help them through the dark times.
Have your staff become your family as well over time?
Well, yes, we're very tight.
Yeah.
We enjoy each other's company, and they respect me as their leader, but I respect them and I listen to them, and they make excellent suggestions. If you respect them as professionals, that goes a long way.
Yes, it does. And so what's next in this season of life?
More of the same for the time being. More research, publication, papers. I am doing some research on amniotic membranes and their importance in ocular surface disease. And we're about to publish a paper using amniotic membranes during pterygium surgery where we have a recurrence rate of zero.
Wow.
We're so excited about it. And we're going to be presenting it over the next couple of meetings and publishing it soon. And as you know, the literature has recurrence rates as high as 38%.
Yeah.
And the recurrence can be very rapid within the first month or two. So this quick technique, no sutures, no tissial glue, it's easy peasy, and it works so beautifully. So we're very excited about all the potential of amniotic membranes.
Well, I'm excited too to be able to avoid tissial and sutures. That would be amazing.
And no conjoint graft.
Oh my goodness.
No. It's so we're gonna distribute videos and all the details at the current upcoming meetings, but it's quick and easy and highly successful and cosmetically attractive, the outcome.
Well, I'll be looking for that for sure. And I tend to follow you at meetings and just catch up on what you're doing and where you're at. But as always, Dr. McDonald, you inspire me. You inspire so many people. Are there any closing words of advice when it comes to kind of the next generation and, you know, what we're seeing in ophthalmology?
I would just say, speak up. I spent a lot of my time not speaking up. I used to come home and I would say to Steve, why didn't they put me on that panel? You know, this is right up my alley. Or why didn't they put me on that committee? And he would say, you know, they're not mind readers. You have to tell them you'd like to be on that committee or you'd like to be on that panel. And just being too quiet. You don't have to be forceful. You don't have to be obnoxious. You know, just say, hey, if there's room for somebody else, I'd love to be on that committee or whatever it is. Just state it politely. And it's amazing. You know, I know several people who are the chief medical officers of important companies who got those positions by walking up to the booth at a meeting and shaking the president's hand and saying, I love your product. And if you need a chief medical officer, think of me. And they got the job.
Wow.
You speak up. You know, it won't always work, but you can't win unless you try.
That's right. That's right. I think that is just such beautiful advice. And I think you gave me that advice actually at the Seattle airport when we were on a delayed flight and trying to figure out our hotel that night.
I remember waiting for luggage. Yes.
Yes. You had so many good words of advice. And, you know, I've really carried that. And you're right. If we don't speak up, you know, no one knows we're there. And, you know, no one knows. You know, they don't know that we want to use our voice in that way. So thank you so much for being so inspirational, such a pioneer. And I just admire your humility, your kindness, and your just true zest for the field of research, for ophthalmology and life.
Deb, thank you. Thank you. And it's a mutual admiration society, I think. What you have done in your relatively short career so far is astonishing. And it's great to chat with you tonight. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for taking the time.
Bye-bye.